Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. On today's LTM pod, I have the pleasure of welcoming Harrison Roberts, an entrepreneur and innovator with over 15 years of experience in high-end visual effects and video production. Now, he is the founder of Edifits, a company that is transforming the insurance landscape by addressing the $100 billion problem of benefits confusion. With a background in successfully bootstrapping three media companies, he brings a unique perspective to the intersection of technology, leadership, and personal growth. Now, what you're going to listen to in this episode is really us exploring the role of AI in marketing and advertising. We all know how much I love AI. Harrison is going to share his journey in the industry while also really highlighting how AI is reshaping content creation and media placement. This is going to be a super, super special focus on AI in video. Although we do talk about the cost-saving benefits of AI, how it enhances video production, localization, and even voiceovers, making high-quality content more accessible to brands of all sizes. Now, his insights are going to give you a deeper understanding of AI and how AI can improve efficiency and effectiveness in marketing. We get into a little bit of a debate of the importance of balancing quality with cost. It's the spicy part of the podcast, but particularly for new brands entering into the market. I'd love to hear what your opinions are afterwards. Now, the future from his perspective also includes AI seamlessly integrating into marketing strategies, giving brands the ability to deliver engaging and personalized content without breaking the bank. Now, if that doesn't pique your interest, I don't know what will. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back and relax. Let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Harrison, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast. I am really excited to have you on here. We're going to dive into a little bit of AI, one of my favorite subjects. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we do get started, let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. I always start off with my starter questions. Mm-hmm. So here's the first one. What was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't.
Well, I was a marketing major in college.
What?
Yeah, at University of Arizona starting in 06. So you declare going into your junior year once you get into the business college, which discipline. There was, you know, econ, accounting, finance, marketing. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I had no idea what I wanted to do, and marketing sounded the easiest. And I think it was like 70-30 female. And it was also, I also thought it was going to be advertising. I thought marketing was like design, advertising. I was creatively oriented. I was always a good copywriter. So that was my appeal to marketing. And then it turns out it was just statistics. A marketing degree is just statistics, it turns out. But I think, I mean, I guess my first role would have then been like selling myself to get into the marketing school and, you know, not wash out into regional development like all the other frat bros did in 2006.
So, yeah. Well, I like that. What is your, that's how you got started in it. I also have a girlfriend whose daughter went to Arizona as well too, and is following that same kind of path that you're talking about where they do have to declare. And I can't remember if she went to Arizona State. They always do like this signal, this hand signal, and I don't know what it is.
That's probably the Sun Devil thing, and they are our sworn enemies.
Okay, so we won't talk about that then. We won't talk about that.
Yeah, you know, like I say that they are the – my school is the best school that anybody can get into.
And then really?
Oh, yeah. Like no matter what you did in your past life, you can still get into U of A, and it's still a respectable degree. ASU, I don't know.
I love that. We will table that one for now. Yeah. Now that's what you did. What is your current role? What are you currently doing?
So right now I am, I started a video production company about that would have been in 2011, started off in reality television, then made the jump to branded content during the sort of YouTube digital content renaissance. No one kind of, this is before pre-roll. This is before Instagram. This is around 2012. And one of those brands that we were doing digital content for on straight to YouTube, they had a $15,000 ad budget at the end of the year. They had one, that was all that they had left in their like annual marketing allocation. And they couldn't find a commercial production company in Los Angeles that could make, that could fulfill the storyboards for that budget. Now, these days, 15K is actually pretty decent. There's a lot of people that can make some incredible stuff for that money. But back then, which is, again, only 13 years ago, they were kind of had to resort to saying, well, we've got our digital advertising guys that are making videos for $500 and knocking it out of the park. Let's see what they can do with this. And it was the first time my production partner and I had ever had production assistance. It was the first time we ever had craft services. It was the first time we ever had trailers. And we were like, wait, so you're telling me that like the more money, the less we do? Like, this is amazing. Like, let's make commercials. Commercials are where it's at. And plus the turnover was like, you know, you work really, really closely with somebody for a month or two. And then it's kind of like, cool. Now we get to like wipe our hands clean. And then we come back with fresh minds 6 months later if we do another campaign. But the whole turnover, being able to kind of build a skill set while we're working on these smaller projects, and then eventually maybe we jump to TV or film. That was the idea back then. So that's how we ended up with a physical production company. And then we started working with the Ring Video Doorbell when they were just a startup company back in 2015-ish. They get acquired by... That's a whole nother story as to how that happened, because it was all just one phone call to the right guy who knew somebody from college. And that's a whole nother story. But when they got acquired by Amazon, we kind of got rolled up into that apparatus. And to this day, we kind of became the startup smart home guys. And that was sort of our thing for a few years. Through that, I then started a post-production company to service the physical person. So we'd shoot the commercials, but now we could also do high-end VFX, and that's sort of where my interest in AI grew. Because from the beginning, we've always been about the bottom line. We've always been about hyper efficiency and using the best tools available. So naturally, you know, when deepfakes became prevalent in 2017, that's when I got heavy into generative video. And then during COVID, I was approached by a good friend that worked for a large insurance carrier. And him and the other sales reps were watching their commissions getting slashed because they could no longer do in-person presentations. The workforce had become completely decentralized. And me being, and you're of the same mindset. To be a marketer, you have to be somewhat of a futurist and you have to watch trends. I kind of knew the toothpaste was never going back in the bottle. That remote workflow, decentralized workplaces, that's just was going to be the new normal. And it sort of has been. I know that they want us back in the office, but it's not going to happen. So that's when I started harnessing this generative video, the stuff we were doing with deepfakes. Well, why don't we take that to an underserved industry like insurance? Let's just, change the sales cycle, because sales is an emotional transfer and chatbots aren't going to get it done. At least that's my opinion. My number one competition right now from what I'm doing today, trying to bring high-end video content to insurance sales, my number one competition is, your large language models. So still doing the physical production, that's sort of my legacy business. But the big growth sector, and I'm sure what we'll get into is, how is AI both replacing and supplanting the traditional production process?
What is it that you love about what you're doing, but also what do you not like?
So the thing it's funny because, we were talking before and there's some industries that are inherently unsexy to people. I think a lot of people get into the marketing advertising space because they aspire to do a Nike commercial or they aspire to do Adidas. And we did some really cool. It makes everybody in our company feel great to see our stuff on a Super Bowl or on a Thursday night football game. Like that certainly, keeps a lot of, coal in the fire. For me personally, after doing that for 10 years, and I don't know if you're like this or if you've experienced this, that, I mean, to see what we're capable of doing today compared to even a year ago and compared to 5 years ago, and for people to just ask for more for less, we're constantly asking to do more with less resources.
Yes.
You know, that's been a complete paradigm shift to when I'm working with these really lovely people in Omaha, Nebraska, and they think I'm an absolute wizard with the types of things I can build for them. And so to actually kind of feel like really like needed and wanted and respected again is really, really nice. And I know it's a little, maybe that sounds a little sappy, but I'm like, because I didn't realize it totally caught me off guard when I'm like, why am I enjoying, like, why will I go to the end of the earth for these people I've never even met before in Omaha? And it's like, and Omaha is just the place where like three of the largest insurance carriers are all based, like Lincoln, MetLife, they're all out there. And it's just because like, I feel like these people, like I'm really doing something tangible. Like we really are at the forefront of like a new industry. And as much as I thought early on, I was trying to kind of sow my creative oats. I would write in my free time. I was trying to write single camera comedy and I was writing a lot of our own early commercials. I've learned now that it's really just like solving complex problems is really more rewarding for me at this stage. Because creative itself is, I don't know. There's another story about why we as an agency decided to not offer creative services.
Yeah.
We made that decision, like a hard decision back in like 2017. And so I fell out of love with that.
So it sounds like, the thing that you love the most is the satisfaction that you get from like almost a satisfied customer, and that satisfied customer isn't always that big name, which I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head. I also feel that same way. Before we hopped on, I told you I love startups. The reason that I love startups is because they don't have the big dollars. You have to get creative. You have to do more with less. And there's nothing more satisfying than it worked.
Yeah.
And look at it, right? Like, or even like, renaming something or packaging something like, wow, you did all of that. Like I have some swag that I've still kept because from previous companies, because there's an association to that. Like I know what it took to get that name on the backpack, like that means something. And it may seem like a silly little backpack or even like a sticker. And this is such a rudimentary example of it, but like there is something really satisfying. And I like the spark that customers get, or even internally when people get excited about something that you've put together, right? Like that energy, it's palpalable.
Now,
that's what you like. That's what you love.
Yeah.
Tell me what you don't like. What can I pluck out of your job?
Yeah. It's that flip side. It's, I heard this quote that, and this goes back to why we pivoted away from creative services and also why I decided to really sink my teeth into AI was I heard this quote. I'm butchering it a little bit, but it's from Seth Godin, who's like a master marketer. I recommend Read the Dip if you haven't out there. It's only 100 minutes long. His quote is, you don't want to be in a race to the bottom because you might win. And I was just like, oh shit, that's us. Like we got in this space because we were 40% cheaper than the big dogs. And now there's people that are, that are 14 years younger than me now that are willing to do things for exposure or willing to just do it for clout. And it's like, how can you win in that industry? And so for me, it's the constant of the traditional advertising space. It's the constant downward pressure where I can kind of see my guys getting burnt out. And really like, I'm always honest with them as much as possible, but I tell them like, hey, like, because most of my workforce is very, very young. And I have to tell them like, hey, like, you have to be reading this. You have to be subscribing to these newsletters. You have to be watching these YouTube videos. You have to be on these Reddit forums because otherwise, like I hired you because you're the new me. And if you're going to be durable in this for the next 10 years, you can't be replaced in the next 3 years. So you got to stay up on this stuff. And, but that's just, you know, that's a grind. Cause usually like, you know, you could become a really good sound mixer or you could become a really good colorist. And up until this moment, that would buy you maybe a 15-year career. But yeah, everything is changing really, really quickly right now.
Yeah. Well, I know. I love that. And I actually think that leads into perfectly into the next question, which is how you're staying up to date with the trends. So it sounds like you have other people read the things for you. Just kidding. Just kidding. But truthfully, how?
No. That's really, so I have all of, I have like my, like three like trusted guys on my team. And I have them every incoming solicitation we get, whether it's from it could be a VFX firm from South Korea. It could be someone from Y Combinator with new like rotoscoping tools. Like people tend to find you pretty good. Or if I find something interesting, I'm like, reach out to them, have a conversation. I have them using AI record and transcribe all of that. So I always get a 2-page write-up of what happened. And it's completely passive for them. All they have to do is have a 15 to 20 minute conversation. And then I'm getting the nitty gritty details of it. So that's sort of my time saver there. But I don't know. I've always been, you know, and we kind of touched on this on the intro too. Like, I think that there is something about the marketing and advertising space where if you have a universal sensibility, it kind of shines through in a lot of different ways. Like if you're somebody that can, like, you can do traditional marketing, you can also sink your teeth into advertising, but then you can also do, you know, high-end legal communications or political PR. It's all just kind of putting yourself in the shoes of your audience and trying to understand them. And so I think that does require that sort of, you know, that universal sensibility. And I feel like, you know, not to toot my own horn too much here, but I think even from early on, I've always been able to see which way the wind is blowing. So, you know, there's a few newsletters that I'll recommend if you're not following the Future Party. That's the best newsletter on the planet.
Nice.
There's another one called 404 Media. I highly recommend their stuff. It's some guys that came from Vice and spun off. And then if you want to get more like, you know, I've got boomer parents that read everything they tell me. I'm like, stop reading Drudge Report. Like, I have to look at this stuff to like be up on what's happening. And like, you know, you mix that with a little bit of like, see what the Times is doing, listen to the Daily. But really, like, man, Future Party, 404 Media, those tell me what's coming down the pipeline. And then there's a few subreddits. Like, there's AI Video. There's another one called Singularity. And then my Twitter feed is just a mess of like,
just nonstop,
just doomsday stuff and all sorts of things. Everything from carnivore diets to prepping and kawaii, that type of stuff.
I love that. Yeah. We'll be sure to take note of those because I'm always really curious how other people are staying up to date with the trends. I also really liked what you said about having the sensibility as a marketer. The way that I view it is very, very much so in the same way. I view, you know, as you were talking, I think of it as like a generalist, which I've always hated that term. And I'm sure that I've said this in many other interviews as well too, because it makes it seem like you know a lot about a little, but you actually just, to me, a generalist means, and in the way that I am trying to articulate it, it means that I've got the solid foundation. I have all of the tools and also know when I need to go to Home Depot to get that extra swanky tool. So I can build you a house with my general marketing. And it depends on what type of house makes the most sense. Some people want a ranch house. Some people want, like, you know, more square footage inside. Some want open concept. So to me, like what you're talking about, having that sensibility is in ensuring that you have the right foundation so that when people come at you with like, hey, this is what I'm trying to solve. So that I can market this out. Like, you know what house you're trying to build and how many people you need to get to build it. Right. And all of that stuff.
Yeah. And I think like settling on your house is massive, because something that I've been kind of like, I guess, battling with over the past year, and it's really helped me distill my focus into the right arena, is that you know, I feel like, and again, this comes from another Seth Godin book, like it comes from The yeah. Dip, that, you know, as millennials, we were always taught to be, we were kind of taught to be generalists. We were always complimented for being well-rounded. Extracurriculars were an absolute joke. Like there's no worse recipe for someone entering the professional marketplace is do not be good at one thing. Just try
be
to
get you know, all the things.
Yeah. And, but I will say for serial entrepreneurs like myself, that may be, you know, a little ADHD. The thing about it is if you can eventually realize that the rewards are improportionately granted to scarcity, and that scarcity is specialization. So I think me kind of really understanding that I'm enjoying really servicing this market, using my video expertise, and really, really going all out into this one sphere, I think that's really the key to the growth that I've experienced over the last year, is not trying to just say yes to everything and hoping that
yeah. works.
Because I always thought like, oh, who's going to be the next ring? If I keep saying yes to all these clients, one of them will be the next ring that sort of takes off and gets bought by Apple or whatever. You know, now it's more like, no, I'm competent. I can actually kind of blaze my own trail. And yeah. I just need to be hyper-focused and not so scattered about things. So I think, you know, whether it's a CEO that I work with some companies that, especially these direct-to-consumer brands that they all want to be lifestyle brands. It's like, just do the one thing really, really well. And you can pivot later.
You've got to be able to do something really well so that you can start to figure out what do I introduce, right? Like I always feel like it's this video game of unlocking. Once you've reached all of this, what's the next thing that you unlock to get to that next level? I want to dive into video content and AI because I feel like I could probably talk to you for days about all of this stuff, but I really want to dig into just kind of your thoughts on AI and its transformation in video. When we started the podcast, before we started the podcast, I told you I'm super passionate about AI, but video content is not one that I've really, really been able to like wrap my arms around quite yet. So How is AI transforming video content as you see it?
So I've been thinking about, you know, the best way to kind of to tell this story in a way that it really clicks for people. And I think that, you know, we've all lived through this digital music revolution. Cause usually, you know, the way I look at the three vectors of media, I look at audio, print, and then video. And the way it works is audio is always the first domino to fall. And we saw that with Napster was the first thing to kind of really disrupt that. And then if you follow the steps, we go from Napster to iTunes, and then we get to Spotify. And so that's going to be the first thing that gets disrupted by AI. Like you could already produce radio ads today that are maybe only 90 or 95% fidelity, but then you have of a real human doing a voiceover. But you have to look at the cost benefit analysis. So when I started doing this, you know, one of our offerings as like a 360 company was, yeah, I'll source your voiceovers to you. And the brands that I was working with were like, okay, so that means that we have to put out a casting call. So we're hiring a casting director. That's $900. We have to pay the casting website. That's going to be another $150. We're going to do auditions. That's going to be all of our time for 3 or 4 days. Whoever we cast is now going to come into the studio. They're going to get their royalties, and you know it's going to cost us anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 for the talent. And now we need the sound mixer there, and we got to buy lunch for everybody. This becomes like a minimum $7,000 endeavor. And we came in and we found Voices123 and Voices.com, which just put it up there. People have these things called home studios, which I know. And we just take this for granted now, but this was all novel only 10 years ago. And we were saying, there are people around the world that will give you their voice in perpetuity for $1,200. And it's crystal clear. And they're professionals and they do everything. And you can work with them and they're fantastic. You can direct it remotely. So that you're taking something that was once, you just cut it in half, a fraction of what it used to cost. Now you have 11 labs and you have PlayHT. Those are your AI video cloners. You could take anyone's voice, clone it in a matter of 90 seconds, and then you could, and then you can generate it 20 different times, cut it together. It'll be a cohesive 30-second commercial or a voiceover, or in our case, we do it for foreign languages. So now your cost went from $9,000 down to $1,200. Now it's down to $400. So even if it's not 100% fidelity, that's enough of a cost jump to make people go the AI route.
Yep.
So now where does it go from here? So right now, when I say $400, well, that's the cost of hiring my assistant editor for a day to generate all that content, put it together. But eventually, this is going to be good enough to where someone such as yourself that has that universal taste, like, you know what you're going for, but maybe you don't have the time to like connect all the pieces. Within 6 months, I mean, definitely within a year, but all these timelines are way faster than I've been anticipating. So maybe within 6 months, you'll just be able to read into your phone, this is the copy, this is the time, and then it's going to give you within 30 seconds, and that'll just be part of your job. So there will, now your cost is now zero. It's just your in-house. I mean, your in-house can be your intern or something. So audio will be the first to go. And we're already doing that for localizations. All of our commercials that are in English, we're now putting them into other markets. So, you know, the good side of that from the brand perspective is that, you know, let's say you're Gatorade and you decided that, you know, we're going to spend millions in these five markets. These are our major markets. Philippines, you know, we're not going to spend $1 million in the Philippines. Now that the production cost is maybe 1/20th of what it used to be, it makes sense to make that investment and to throw up some digital ads, to reach out on TikTok, to reach out on Instagram, because now you can localize the commercial. You don't have to reshoot it and you can localize it in any language. So you are now able to reach every market. And that's sort of where the biggest growth within our video production side has been telling people, hey, like, don't go reshoot this commercial in another language for $200,000. We can localize it using just post tools for $15,000. So that's just the voice part.
Yeah.
And now then you get to the print part, the next domino to fall. You know, modeling has already been almost completely disrupted by Instagram because, you know, used to have to go through the casting process. Now you just, you know, DM somebody, offer them some money, and they'll do it for almost next to nothing.
Well, now you're marketing, right?
Yeah. Well, now Midjourney, you can just generate that person from scratch. And I mean, so now we've eliminated the print portion. The video will be the last domino to fall because it's so complex. But here's how we're already using it. Again, we do a lot of smart home stuff. So you can imagine that we call them over-the-shoulder plates, OTS plates. So you can imagine that the screen looks like, you know, if this is the camera, someone's holding the phone like this.
Yeah.
And so you see the thing that's on the phone and it's like a close-up right here.
Yeah.
This background plate, we can now take this on green screen. As long as we just have a hand on a green screen, we can generate the background plate using Stable Diffusion or Sora. Everyone has a tool now. So now we're no longer, you want string lights in the background, or you want to make it look like Aspen, or you want to make it look like Italy. We don't need to go send B-roll out there. We don't need to send a team out there. We now just generate it on the fly. When you think about TV shows, like, you know, there's a, have you heard of the show? It's called Homecoming. I've never seen it. It's on, but it's like a sports show.
Yeah. I've heard of it.
So when I look at something like that, I'm like, okay, they chose baseball because that's way less ambitious and expensive than, like, if he was a football player and you had to generate that arena and all the people in the crowds and stuff like they did in Dark Knight. Like, that was a crazy expensive shot.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Now you can generate the background. So right now, anything that's blurred or dropped out, we can kind of do that today. Eventually, you'll be able to do the whole scene, but for now, it's I mean, when we're on set now, we're just like, if every minute costs $4,000, let's not waste time shooting plates, which is just background objects.
What about those? And I don't, well, I'm sure that you're familiar with these because I feel like I get these ads all the time because of just my algorithm. But it's these like, you know, you no longer have to book talent to do your company video.
Digital avatar.
Yeah, your digital avatar. That's, I'm at a loss for words today. But yeah, it's the digital avatar. Like, where does that come into play? Is that all digital? I mean, like, I'd love your opinion on that.
So this is exactly where I think, so Edifits is my, we're starting off with insurance, but I think it's going to grow larger into HR compliance and banking and a lot of other stuff. Sales in general. And I think our digital avatars are, I don't think there's anyone that even comes close to our capabilities. And that's because we are taking live performances and augmenting it with AI. We're basically deep faking our own talent. Whereas what these other platforms are doing is they'll just take, they'll just shoot someone reading like an encyclopedia entry or just some nonsense entry on a teleprompter. And then they're just doing, they'll capture 30 seconds of motion. So the motion will loop forwards and reverse. And then it's the digital lip sync that they stack on top of it. And more often what they're doing is it's not the person's actual mouth. They're actually replacing the mouth with something.
Yeah.
So I feel like bad AI is more off-putting than just doing like a text explainer or something. Like I try to tell my people, like, because when you watch those videos, those ads that you get, where it's like, never hire an influencer again. I'm like, but I'm not using this. This looks like crap.
Yeah.
And this was already, and they're putting out something that they think looks really, really good. So there's a swarm of companies out there. HeyGen and Synthesia are the two like household names for people that are deep in this space. I think Synthesia, in terms of like, who's backing them and where they're going with it, I think they have a chance to become the market leader. HeyGen, from a marketing perspective, has done the best job. But from what I've seen, the product is not commercially viable. For me and my clients, we've been unable to use it in any broadcast capacity. We have a handful of other partners that are basically, we have like five different models. Like two are open source, three are VFX companies that we've partnered with. And so we're still doing, to get true what we call generative lip sync, taking someone's performance and then putting it in another language, or even if we wanted to take this podcast and put it in another language, those other platforms can do it in a very cursory way, but it's not going to really resonate with an audience because the other big thing is the translation. DeepL does a better job than Google at actually one-to-one translations, but it's still anybody in a foreign market that would listen to or read that copy. I think they're going to be really upset that you couldn't just pay a translator $150. Like, it's just lazy to throw it through Google Translate.
I agree 1,000%. I also, what I'm really enjoying about talking to you about this, because I've talked to a lot of people about AI, and I think this really has to do with kind of your origin story of where you started in actual production. Because to me, the difference that I hear between talking to you and someone else that I've talked to about like video content or other people that I've talked to is that you're like, hey, this, I'm trying to make this as human as possible, which means that I need these elements versus the engineer who's like looking at a script. Do you know what I mean? They're like looking at the code and they're like, we can execute it. These are two very like different things. And I think like as a brand, I would want to know, how do I distinguish between both of those? How do I know which one is like the one that's not going to like the one that I'm not going to go want to go with? Like, I would rather go with like and I'm not trying to shamelessly like plug your company at all, but like I hear the difference in just how you're articulating it. And that to me has been like the biggest blocker. It's also a blocker for me from like a mid-journey perspective, because I was just talking to another agency the other day and they were really excited about their use of AI. And they're like, AI is really great. We can use parallax and all of these different things, but mid-journey still doesn't get like hands right. And like we saw this picture and like the finger was so large, right? So like how as a brand can I distinguish between one or the other? Because I think AI is all the new hotness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell everybody, I'm like, so we have this little line item on our budgets that looked ridiculous 6 months ago, but now people don't question it. It's called fine tuning. So basically anything that comes out of Midjourney or Sora, anything else like that, it's going straight into After Effects. Like there's nothing that comes out of that that's ready for prime time, that's ready for commercially viable. So like my guys have to go in there and they have to touch it up, and it's got to take at least 8 hours or something. But
I'm going to stop you right there because I love what you just said right there. You are saying that there is no removal of the human element when it comes to AI. And that is something that I have been preaching from a content creation perspective. I am going to take what AI gives me after I've prompted it really well to get me the most. And then I'm going to do the human thing with it. Like it collapses time for you.
I'm sure every manager, I don't know if there's going to be a phrase for this eventually, but like every time I have to tell my guys, I'm like, hey, like I know what you're going to do. You have to rewrite it. I'm demanding that you rewrite it in your own words. Like you prompt it, whatever. Like I understand this because it's weird. There's something happening in a macro sense where like, because I see it in my clients now. They're just like, I can't put my thumb on this, but something's off. And we're just it's not human. Like we know, like instinctively, like we know something's kind of repelling us, but there's the engineering mind. And I went through like a round of like incubators and accelerators and got rejected by everybody. But I think the tide is going to turn the next year because my pitch to them, and I feel like you understand what I'm getting at here, is that, you know, yes, the at the end of the day, the actual model itself is super important. But what you can't teach these engineering teams in Stockholm and in Korea is wardrobe, it's lighting, it's sensibilities, it's the way they move, it's hair and makeup. So when you look at, there's these guys that have 100 avatars and we only have 6. But ours look like the type of person you would want in your commercial. Ours look like the type of people you would want selling you these products. Whereas they just like, you know, they put Svetlana in a hard hat on a construction site and you're just like, who wants that? No one's asking for that.
Super realistic.
Yeah. Like it's not like anybody, like when you're buying health insurance, it's not like a stethoscope around their neck is selling like, that's not how this shit gets sold. Like, it's just not how it works.
It's so true. Also, like, more isn't always better. Like, I would rather have a fewer to select from, and then knowing that you're always going to create more because you've got to be able to continue to improve on it as technology improves, right? As you start to fine tune even more, right? Like, the shortcuts get made a lot faster. But, like, I think ones that have such a variety, for one, being the person that like has to select things, even like simplistically from a voiceover. Like I've done that voiceover, like listening of like, what do I want? What do I not want? Do I want the English accent? Do I want the Australian accent? Do I want it to be a man? Do I want it to be a woman? And she's too high pitched and he sounds like he's on National Geographic. Like sometimes you get like analysis paralysis because it's too much. So you may as well hone in on like doing things well. I think that's a challenge for businesses who want to start leveraging AI. So like if you were to give, I don't know, I don't want to say tips and tricks, but give me some like tips as a business that I can take into like the evaluation of when I should use AI for video.
Let me ask you a question, and we may disagree on this. Do you prioritize quality of content or like media? If you're looking at $1 million budget spend, would you allocate more towards production of the content or towards ad placement? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would. I mean, if my boss is listening, I would say 50-50. But how I feel in my soul, because this is how I feel about it, I would have to say it's 70-30 and 70 from a production standpoint. Yeah. Because really shitty stuff doesn't perform well no matter how much money you throw at it, right? So I really value something really solid. I'm really big on quality over quantity and being really strategic with it. So I don't know if that's going to disagree with where you were going at, but that's how I feel.
So I look at it as I try to put companies into two brackets. You're either direct marketing or you're legacy marketing. It's either like, you know, no one knows who you are, so you need to actually educate the market, or you're legacy marketing, you're Coca-Cola, you're just trying to, you're Budweiser, you're trying to reaffirm our purchase decisions that we're already making. So if you are, no one knows who the hell you are, I go like 80-20 into the media placement side. If I was legacy, I need your name to be, I need to know your name. And that means you need to be everywhere. And I don't really care about the quality. I just need to know, wait, what does that company do? Oh, they sell hats. What's so special? What's special about their hats? Oh, they work for people with small heads like mine. Like that's their thing that they do.
I think your head looks fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I worked hard on this setup, but then the other side is like, you know, again, and because I saw this with Ring, no one knows what the hell a video doorbell is. This is why you need it. This is how much it costs. This is where you buy it. And if you act now, you get a 20% discount. That's the direct response marketing. And it's so not sexy, but it really, really works for new brands. And in working with the CEO back then, all regional advertising, he was getting crazy bang for his buck going hard on regional advertising instead of splurging for national ads, which all the startups, all the Y Combinator startups we work with, were like, we want a Super Bowl ad. I'm like, all right, I'll give you that. But this guy's crushing it over here going the regional route. But the legacy advertising, if you're working for an established brand, then yeah, I would agree with you going back to the, going, you know, back 70-30 into the quality of the production. So to go back to your question. Yeah.
That's an interesting take.
So you were right. In a way.
Well, let's just agree to disagree because I don't think it's a right or wrong. I see what it is that you're saying, but I do still think that I would still have a percentage higher for quality because crap is crap. Like that's still a representation of your brand. Well,
the AI that you're going to get your hands on today is mostly going to be crap.
Okay. This is why I have not dabbled in it from a business perspective.
Explain your version to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah. all of those, you know, now I'm, again, you want to spend three times more and get a good digital avatar from a company like mine. Now, I think that's a good way to straddle the midpoint there.
Yeah.
Like work with a company that specializes in this kind of thing, because I think at some point,
I've been
another thing I've been pitching all my clients is, hey, you have a VFX supervisor on set. I want you to start bringing an AI supervisor on set who can literally tell you, you can big cost cutting here, here, and here. And I also want an AI supervisor in post. Where can we save money? Where can we move faster? And that's, so I think that's going to be a new role. You heard it here first. And I think having that, I think having that AI supervisor, will be able to bridge the gap. And so I think if you are a new company and you really need to flood the marketplace and you need to get your name out there, then I think, you know, hop on board immediately. Start using those digital avatars or start generating, this is where I'm limited because I think they call it puppeteering, where you take it's the pen tool inside of After Effects, where you can take a still image from Midjourney, but you can kind of animate, you know, the flames or the sky or the arms, like a parallax type image.
Yeah.
Very, very evocative, very, very engaging. Shouldn't cost much for you to start getting content like that out. Stack an AI voiceover on top of it. You can even put an AI influencer in front of it if you're doing TikTok. Like you should be able to build something for less than $5,000, and I would spend $30,000 pushing that out there just to get your name out there.
Okay. So I feel like you've moved me over to your side a little bit in the way that you're describing the quality, right? Like in my version, I don't want to pay for crap, right? So if the difference is like 5,000 to 10,000 from like a quality perspective, I want to spend the extra 5,000 and I'll pull from like my media spend so I can get something that would be a better representation. But I'm not saying like spend, I'm not talking about like the Super Bowl ad, like, cause that also seems, cause I've also worked for companies that are like that as well too, that they want like the big digital billboard and do all of this. And like, and in reality doesn't do really a ton. So you've won me over to your side slightly.
So budgetarily, I would look at it like this. And again, I'm just thinking like direct to consumer stuff, because that's just easy when you think about, you know, mass marketing.
Yeah, we need an example.
So. Yeah. So when I'm thinking about that, I'm like, okay, what are you already spending for photography? What are you already spending for your high-end photography? Because it's not as much as video, but it's certainly not cheap. I would say that same amount that you're spending for that, you should be able to take, those stills should be living. You should be able to bring those stills to life with some of the tools that I'm talking about. And that just would, again, require this. You would look for a VFX generalist, but whoever you eventually hire, I would make sure that they were on the cutting edge of these AI tools, because that's how they're going to stack the video on top, or sorry, that's how they're going to stack the voiceover on top. And that's how they're going to give it some life, because they're going to be able to generate some motion somewhere in that still image. But it should not cost more than what it takes to go out and shoot a high-end still. Someone tinkering for 5 hours on these AI image generators should be able to give you something actually, I think, more engaging.
No, I'm in agreement there. I think like being able to leverage AI to make, I don't know if it's the mundane, but kind of those things where you're like, well, I can leverage AI for this so that I can spend the time that I want to spend on using this thing, mm-hmm. where I was spending my money just to get the basic.
Yes.
And you're right. Like video is expensive. Photography is expensive. This is why there's a huge play for influencer marketing to begin with, because like, mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of money that goes out on photography that you can only use once, right? Like that photo shoot, it's easily a photo shoot. Actually, I can honestly tell you, I have paid for photo shoots that are a stupid amount of money, like $50,000.
Yeah.
And like you get a ton, but it's only that one time, right?
Not
and you have to have like all the scenarios in your head so that you can use it in the future. I think this is why there's the rise in influencer marketing. This is also going to be, I think aid in like that rise of AI that you're talking about for video. I mean, I could literally talk to you all day about this, but I have one final question.
Sure, sure.
And that is, if you knew then what you know now, which I kind of feel like you've already sprinkled a little bit of this, but let's see if you say anything different. If you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Man, if you're keen on the content creation aspect, the actual production aspect, I wish I knew more about media placement when I was younger, because mm-hmm. that has been a very durable industry. We've had all this downward pricing pressure on the creation side. There's very few people that have become experts in media placement, and they've been doing great this whole time, because they've just had to reposition themselves from, you know, advertising on the local CBS affiliate to getting placement on Hulu pre-roll. But there's less than like 100 people that are really, really good at it. And I think when you're talking about specialization, like understand that beast, like how the two things play together. Because I really think that everybody we ever talked to from day one would say, hey, like, can you actually, like, they all want ROI. And mm-hmm. and it was very difficult for me to say, like, that's not my job. I execute what you want creatively. And if it's wrong, like, that's, again, why I got out of creative. Because creative's always the first head to get chopped. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're never mad at the dude that did the lighting or anything. Like, it matters, but that's not what happens. Like, production will get multiple reps. Creative gets axed from the beginning. So I would just say, be more cognizant of the interplay between the two sides, because most of the times they do look at it. They think of it as a percentage of media spend versus production, and just understand the client you're working with. And then, and again, I guess the other really big thing is like, really understand who you're serving, because we like to think we're serving the end user, the audience, but that's not who pays your check. Like, yeah, give them what they want. And then after you've kind of earned credibility, 6, 7 years, 10 years later, I mean, it wasn't until I had already been in this for 9 years before I could honestly say, hey, you guys shouldn't do this, because I have the track record to tell you why. Yeah. Up until then, I had no business at 25 years old with only 2 years of experience coming in and telling people, you know, that joke's not very funny. You should change that. That's not my place.
Coming in hot in your 20s, yeah. With yeah. all, you know, you're like Emily yeah. in Paris. Yeah. Well, Harrison, thank you so much for coming on here. This has been an absolute blast. I appreciate, you know, all of the insights that you've shared. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll have to do it again. I appreciate it.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Harrison Roberts. As we talk about AI in video content creation, let's dive into the key takeaways. My first key takeaway for this episode is that AI is changing marketing content creation in general, but marketing content creation specifically for this key takeaway. Now, it's reshaping kind of the marketing industry by making content production faster and more affordable. These are all really key things from a marketing perspective. Something that is music to most marketers' ears, right? Now, Harrison did a really great job of breaking down how AI reduces the cost of creating voiceovers, visual content, and even digital avatars, really giving brands the opportunity to engage audiences in new ways. Now, his thoughts on AI changing the landscape of content creation so much as to develop a new job, AI supervisor, is interesting and definitely worth maybe a separate conversation on all the new roles that AI is creating, right? Because I strongly believe the change will also bring on not necessarily new roles like he did, although that was interesting, but it's going to bring on another set of like required skills for marketers moving forward, like the prompt engineer, right? But I digress. Back to the takeaway. I really went down that rabbit hole. Back to the takeaway at hand, AI changing marketing content creation. Now, it is changing the landscape, but it's not replacing people. Tools like AI, it saves time and money, but they aren't a magic solution. You need to invest in learning how to balance AI. How to balance AI's potential with your brand's core values, and most importantly, include the human touch. He gave a really great example from his company. Sure, they can use Midjourney or any other AI tool. I can't remember off the top of my head if he was specific with which AI tool, but he said everything that gets produced with AI, that goes straight into After Effects for fine tuning, even so much so that it's a line item in the invoice. So it makes things faster, but you're never going to remove that human touch. Key takeaway number two, go fast and save money with AI. Now, while my first key takeaway really focused on how AI is changing marketing creation, I really want to focus on going fast and saving money where it counts for this particular key takeaway. Because if you listen to the podcast, we do go into the amount of back and forth it takes to get like an image, a video, or even voiceover that you need. That on the surface, it sounds like it doesn't save time, because there is a lot of back and forth, right? There's a lot of editing, reviewing, that fine tuning. The example I want to pull out is the simple one of the voiceover he ran through. And hopefully I'm not going to butcher it, but TLDR, the amount of time it takes to vet, interview, listen, and decide, book studio time, adjust. Now with AI, it takes time for sure, but it doesn't involve 10 people to get one voice. And it doesn't span over days. It can take a day. What can be time consuming is really just kind of making the decision of who and what to go with. What do you like? What other edits you want to make? Now, I know from personal experience with photo shoots, they're big bucks, lots of talent, but you have to think you have to think of the future you for every single photo shoot, right? Like what would be perfect for that big campaign that you're thinking about, or what it is that you want to be able to feature on your website, can sometimes be very short-sighted for, you know, that photo shoot you did in January. Is it exactly what you're going to need in September? Maybe not, right? And you don't, it doesn't help you account for the changes that happen in both your strategy and maybe like your company in general. My final key takeaway is figure out the tool that's right for you. Now, I understand the temptation to jump on the latest AI bandwagon, right? But proceed with caution, my friends, not because it's going to replace you, but because not all AI tools are created equal. So be careful and evaluate their platform's capabilities and make sure that it aligns with your needs and your objectives. Basically, is what they're selling what you're buying? By taking the time to thoroughly assess AI tools and technologies, you can feel good about making strategic investments that will enhance your content creation workflow, help you meet your advertising needs, and ultimately ease the burden of your overall marketing efforts. This may involve testing multiple solutions, seeking out expert advice, and prioritizing quality over cost savings in certain scenarios. Now, the goal should be to find the AI tools that are really going to help you deliver the most impactful and engaging experience for your target audience. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I really do want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page, YouTube channel. Leave it in a review on Apple. Slide into my LinkedIn DMs. I actually do look at them and respond. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.